into the garbage, you flyboy.
This is a rebellion, isn't it?
I call it aggressive negotiations.
The garbage will do!
Welcome to the Trash Compactor Podcast, Star Wars from the female point of view. I'm MC. This month we have a great episode. We've got a round table with Sarah and the Smalls, and we're going to be talking about the end of Star Wars Rebels and just how that series has affected all of us. So since the last podcast, we've had the Last Jedi novelization, as well as the DVD, digital, everything come out. So there's a lot of people who are getting to see The Last Jedi again, as well as read the novelization, which is expanded from the actual movie. We'll be talking more about that next month, because we'll be talking about some of the novels that have come out. But just as a brief review of it, I thought the novelization of The Last Jedi was amazing. There's a fine line that you have to walk when it comes to novelizations. You don't want it to be too different from the movie that came out, but you do want to have other stuff that is, you know, make it worth it to read it. And that's really what we got from this book. You can really tell that Jason Fry respects all of the Star Wars stuff that has come out. It is tonally very similar to the other books, which is important. You don't want to have a novelization that feels out of place with the other books. And the additional things that are in it really enrichen the story, but I don't feel like the movie is lacking anything by not having them. I mean, you get some wonderful things like a memorial to Han Solo and Leia thinking about her time with him. You also get to see the other lesson that Luke had, and just lots of little tiny things that we'll get into this more next time, but just, it is really worth the read. I got the book and sat down and I read it just in one sitting. It was really quite good. So yes, please go and get that. But we'll talk more about that next month. And for now, we'll be talking about the animated side of things. So let's get right into this month's roundtable. Welcome to this month's roundtable. We're talking about the end of Star Wars Rebels, how does the entire show hold up, how does it fit into the larger Star Wars mythos, and what's next for the crew of the Ghost. I'm MC, and I'm here with...
Smalls.
And Sarah.
So, yeah, it's the end of an era. Or not an era, but the thing that happens between two eras. So...
yeah. Ugh.
I've talked to both of you since the show has finished airing, and basically the first thing I heard from both of you was just, like, vomiting feels.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, the finale is... it's, like, one of the most perfect television finales I've ever seen, I feel like. It was so beautiful.
And it's better the second time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The first time, I loved it, but I felt a little underwhelmed by it. The second time, it was just flawless.
You can really tell in watching it that they have planned this from the very beginning. Like,
oh,
I feel
yes.
Like Filoni sat down and wrote every single beat that was happening on this show.
I remember, I think, a couple... I don't know, last month or sometime, talking to you about I remember joking. I was like, well, in new canon, there's been all this, like, you know, like hyperspace, like deeper hyperspace lore and the Purrgil. And I think I joked with you, or half joked, I was like, yeah, you know, Ezra doesn't have to die. The Purrgil can come and take him away. So I wasn't underwhelmed at all as I was watching it. I was like, it's happening. It really is happening. Oh, yeah. I love space whales. And so I was really happy to see them again. And also just like, I jokingly predicted that.
We all jokingly predicted stuff.
And then our jokes happen. That's what it is with Star Wars, 50-50. Your like joke speculation could happen or not.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to figure out like the best place to start with.
Do we want to talk about the different crew members' like character arcs?
I think the series
and then the seasons. Is that?
Yeah, I think we can touch upon that a little bit. I think like the first character that we should talk about is our main character, and that's Ezra, and just the journey he has gone through over like this entire show. And just, oh my god, Ezra's alive.
I know. You know, it's Ezra Lives time now that we know Ahsoka is.
But no question mark.
Yes. Yeah. I have that shirt available on my Redbubble already, and it's got a Purrgil on it. Yes.
Yeah, I'll be getting that one.
Yeah, there's no question mark. I mean, I watched a like Rebels recon, and then another like panel with Dave Filoni in the cast, and he's like, "Oh yeah, Ezra and Thrawn are not dead. So Thrawn lives, Ezra lives."
I mean, Ezra, it's his journey is so personal. Like, I mean, he is like, you know, the young Jedi character, but his journey was not really connected to him becoming a Jedi because he's not a Jedi yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they've said a lot that it's about him coming to terms with family and also like the big, you know, like letting go thing, like finding where he belongs and accepting that he has found some belonging, and then, you know, being willing to let it go, which mm-hmm. is like part of being selfless and part of being a Jedi. It's interesting, you know, because, you know, he's been on the street for a while at the beginning. So obviously he's like wary of the ghost crew at first, but he's also such an open-hearted person. I don't know. It's hard for me to like talk about Ezra without talking about Sabine, because they both go on these journeys that are like parallel and contrasting.
I would bring up Sabine because, I mean, Sabine and Ezra's connection in the last episode was so vital to everything that he's doing.
And it was something that if you had told me that watching like season one, I would have been like, okay, right. I think Ezra, I mean, we didn't see Sabine joining the ghost crew, but at one point in one of the Darksaber episodes, Hera is saying to Kanan, you know, remember how long it took to get her to trust us? And it didn't take Ezra that long, comparatively. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, they've been really important. They've really, like, sort of, like, sharpened each other, because they've... I would have never thought, like, Sabine is so, like, has been so, like, her thing has been, you know, being afraid to be, like, vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so that last scene where they just, like, communicate silently and they, like, epically trust each other, like, she just trusts him, like, that, that's where I think I started crying, for real.
Yeah, I mean, Sabine and Ezra's friendship, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, because Ezra and Sabine are definitely set up as the characters that the kids are supposed to identify with, because they are young characters who are going on this journey. And I find it, I like that they had both a boy and a girl so that, you know, boys and girls could both have, you know, people that they can identify with, whether or not, you know, it's either one of them. And I love their relationship in that it is so close, but they don't give you any confirmation as to what this closeness actually means, whether or not it's just familial or if it's something that could grow into be romantic.
Yeah, yeah. I love that too. I mean, you know that, like, I really ship Sabezra, you know, as a future, like, adult thing. But, like, I think it's, I love that in the show they didn't really do that with these, you know, kids. They had a lot of more important, you know, things going to do and learn without, like, I mean, they're kids. They shouldn't be kissing right now.
Yeah, and I do think it's important for younger viewers to see, you know, two, a boy and a girl who are very close to each other, who aren't immediately thrust into a romantic relationship.
I agree.
But it's something that their relationship is so strong and so unbreakable that it can go kind of what a potential is so great.
Yes. Yes. That's why I'm kind of like, I know there's, it's going to be a while before we, like, we know what happens next, but I'm honestly living for that, for all the, like, potential, like, ways Fanon, things Fanon can do with that. Like, I'm so excited. Yeah, you know, obviously, like, it's, to be honest, it's been a while since I've watched season one and two, but especially in season one, Ezra sort of was like, oh my god, a pretty girl, I just want, but I figured he just wanted to impress her because she was so cool. I never felt like, and I felt like the relationship was Sabine very much being like, oh, hey kid, I'm so much older than you and more mature. And, like, of course she is a little bit, and she's had, like, wider life experience, but the growing of them to be, like, equal in their friendship is so great.
I think a really interesting part of Ezra's character, aside from his relationships with everybody else, and they mentioned this in Rebels Recon, is Ezra's connection to animals. And this is basically the defining characteristic of Ezra's connection to the Force. And it becomes vital to everything that happens in the final season with the Lothwolves and the Purgles. And I love that they've brought this in, this other connection to the Force, which is so much different. And I still lament that we have not seen Ezra and Octo yet, because I want to see Ezra with Porgs.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
I hadn't thought about that. Oh, gosh.
Oh.
Yeah. Or Ezra and the Crystal Foxes.
That was my second thought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I think The Last Jedi and the mid-season finale of 4, they came out really close together. So I was like, all right, space canines, space puppers.
Yeah, there was a lot of hypothesizing that the Crystal Foxes were going to have some connection with, like, the Lothwolves and everything. And
oh, yeah.
But because, you know, fandom's always like, everything must be connected together in some way.
Yeah, I mean, parallels don't have to mean, like, literal connections. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Crystal Foxes, like, everything is a part of the Force. So, like, even if they're, it's not, like, I mean, movie makers talked about them being, like, a light to the Rebellion. And they, you know, they were, so. But yeah.
So I think moving on from Ezra, the next character that we absolutely have to talk about is Kanan and his journey through this, because, oh my god, we knew where it was going. Like, I don't, like, I think with everybody with Ezra was like, well, maybe he can go off to Wild Space or something. But with Kanan, like, even the hardcore Kanan fans were like, yeah, we know Kanan's gonna die.
Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, a Star Wars mentor. They tend to die. I mean, obviously it's more than that. I couldn't have... The moment, though, that it happened was so much. Because I hadn't thought about... I was avoiding thinking about how it could happen because, you know, denial. But I think I was like, oh, he's going to get, like, someone's going to, like, stab him or shoot him or kill him or whatever. And, but of course, he dies making this epic sacrifice. Of course he does.
Yeah, I kind of figured he was going to die protecting the other characters, but I didn't know how that was going to happen. And actually, it was perfect the way they did it because, you know, his body was enveloped in an explosion. So I can always say that, oh, well, he gave himself over to the Force in that last moment. And maybe we can have Force Ghost Kanan.
I mean, it is possible because you could only become a Force Ghost if you've, like, completely, like, sort of, like, let go. And, like, so it's possible. It's possible. It's definitely, like, it's definitely sounds more plausible to me than, like, the space whales transport Ezra, you know, would at first, like, you're like, which one of these? Oh, yeah. But, yeah, you know, Kanan, we don't see this on the show, but, you know, we get his backstory in his comic miniseries and in the novel A New Dawn where he meets Hera, and like, wow, to be like a survivor of Order 66 on the run, like completely like rejecting his Jedi identity to survive and then
completely embracing it by the end.
Yeah. Yeah. At first, kind of just like joining the rebellion, like telling himself he's joining the rebellion just because, you know, for Hera. But it definitely becomes more than that. And I think, of course, like, having Ezra, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Anakin got Ahsoka, and it brings out, it challenges a different, like, side of you as a Force user or a Jedi to have someone you're teaching.
I really hope that Luke gets to find out about Kanan somewhere along the way, because we find out, in The Last Jedi novelization, that Luke has found out a lot about the old Jedi teachings. Like, he does use the term Padawan, but they very specifically state that Luke is against the idea of getting rid of attachments. And I feel like Kanan is really the first Jedi of that kind of new Jedi order. Sorry, I use the term new Jedi order. Of, like, accepting attachments. So
yeah, I mean, the most obvious example of that is, of course, his relationship with Hera, because he and Hera are, like, you know,
they're space married
and they're so much different than the other, like, major Jedi non-Jedi romance we've seen in Star Wars. Padme and Anakin, obviously completely different circumstances, but I think it was so, I'm so glad that we got to see on screen like the healthy version, healthy unselfish version of that. Ezra learned from Kanan that a lesson, like selflessness, and also that he can bang people. I love, like, Ezra. I hope Ezra and Luke meet and Ezra is like,
and bang.
What? Like, y'all weren't allowed to have relationships?
So I guess we've already talked about Hera a little bit. And she is, like, I don't know if you guys know this, but Hera's my favorite character.
Really?
I'm shocked. What?
Yes, everybody clutched their pearls.
This is brand new information.
I need to go find some pearls.
But yeah, Hera is... I said it in the last time we talked about Rebels. She's such a grown-up. I love how much of a grown-up she is. And she is the face of the rebellion. Like, everybody else in the show does get some sort of rank within the rebellion, but Hera's the general. She's so in charge, and I love how she's gone through this journey where this division between devoting herself to the rebellion and then her little family that she's got, and learning how to balance that. And most of that does come out with her relationship with Kanan, but we can see that with the other characters. Like, what happens, like, the liberation of Lothal. Hera wouldn't have done that earlier because the rebels didn't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, her thing when Kanan first meets her, she really is, like, married to the rebellion. Even before there's a rebel alliance, but, like, she's one of those married to the cause people, and it was, as you say, really cool to see her both, like, preserve that and grow beyond it, you know?
She gets to the point where it's, I'm not doing what I'm told, I'm doing what's right. Because Mon Mothma is, you know, has her plans that she wants to do. And Lothal is not a part of that, but Hera's like, this is important to Ezra, so we're going to do this.
Speaking of Mon Mothma, just a little side note, I have enjoyed her appearances on Rebels so much. She hasn't gotten, like, her own, like, you know, book focusing on her, but she's gotten so much good, like, new content all across, like, new canon that, you know, and she's very consistent across it. She's such an interesting character because, like, she knows and loves so many people who, like, are, like, chaotic good.
Yes.
And she loves that, and she wants that, but for them, but she knows she has to be, like, lawful good. And sometimes she does things that aren't very likable. But I always love her. And I love that, I remember reading the Rogue One visual guide on her page where it was like, and she, like, was exiled after, like, she, like, called, you know, like, on air, like, called out Palpatine and called, I don't remember what she called him. Something really awesome, like, and insulting.
Give me a second, I can grab my copy.
And then we got to see that on Rebels.
It's just out of hand's reach. God.
But I was excited because I was like, oh, that's so cool. We'll never, like, but, you know, it's not on screen. And then it was.
Yeah, I like what they've done with Mon Mothma. Mon Mothma in Legends was always such a question mark. And I've complained about this before in terms of the Legends books, that they were, one, always afraid to write the female characters, and they were always afraid to write the politicians. So Mon Mothma and Leia got screwed over in Legends a lot. But I feel like the new canon is really getting away from that. And it's like, no, we can make these interesting and complex characters who aren't just always, you know, the cowboys shooting their blasters. Because, yeah, Mon Mothma is the face of the rebellion from the moment the rebellion starts in Revenge of the Sith all the way up until into the New Republic, when I don't know when exactly it is she retires. I think they probably mentioned it in Bloodlines, but she was there for a long time.
Gosh, I'm just looking for what she said to Palpatine.
A lying executioner.
Yes! Yes! I remember reading that, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. And then we got to see it.
That's such a great insult, because it's like, it's exactly what he is, and it's so political. Like, cause it's not like she's cussing him out. She's just like, spilling the tea. Just, here it is. Yeah. And one of the relationships with Mon Mothma is her relationship with Saw Gerrera. Who came back in. And that is one of the great things about Rebels, is that they had this wonderful build up to Rogue One. And they were able to bring Forrest Whitaker in as Saw Gerrera, and we got to see his actual rebel team. And for people who watch Forces of Destiny, they actually did a short that had Jyn and Sabine together.
Yes. I love that episode because they both have that similarity, you know, in being like I am a rock, I am an island. But Sabine is further along with that, and she says that to Jin. Like, I used to think being alone was better. But I think, I don't think Jin is with, this is after Jin and Saw.
Have parted ways, yeah. No, it was just a fun little cameo, I think, but still, I wanted to mention it, because also I, you know, fangirled over that. No. I fangirl over a lot of forces of destiny.
It's so wonderful that Rebels didn't shy away from the, you know, those complexities, which is really great on any show, but on a show, you know, that has as one of its primary audience kids, to highlight, you know, the paradoxes and complexities of doing good.
The way I think of Star Wars Rebels is kind of the same way they always talk about Doctor Who, which is a show that deals with a lot of dark stuff, but definitely is aimed toward, has a lot of kid stuff in it. And it's because they're not kid shows. They're family shows. Everyone can enjoy them, but that means that they will keep things relatively child friendly, but they are not afraid to get into these darker aspects that, you know, shades of gray with their characters, and they'll kill off main characters. Basically, the only thing they won't do is they won't show, you know, a Hera and Kanan love scene, and they won't show a lot of blood, so.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm always happy to see, like, family media that isn't afraid to let children deal with complexity, because they often, you know, they can handle it sometimes a lot better than adults can.
So one of the big characters that came up in the latter half of this show that we only barely got to touch on in the last time we talked about Rebels, because he'd only just appeared, is Grand Admiral Thrawn, who I think really shaped how things, like, actually went by. I am somebody who has read all of the Legends books, and I am someone who's often said, I think the Thrawn trilogy is overrated. Rebels made me like Thrawn.
I don't like bad guys. I love Thrawn.
He's just
creepy and evil and wonderful.
Yeah, he is not your typical bad guy. He is your thinking man's bad guy, I think. I loved his adversarial relationship with Hera. And I feel like it's very much tied to Hera's storyline. I'm very glad that Thrawn is also still alive, not just because I think there's a lot of potential for him in post-Return of the Jedi era stuff, but I felt like they almost hadn't earned Ezra defeating Thrawn because they hadn't set up that adversarial relationship. I thought that if Thrawn's gonna, like, be, like, outright killed, Hera's gotta be, like, more directly involved in it.
Like, I think, like, Thrawn, for me, I'm like, oh, cool story function. Like, I never read a lot of old Legends. So my first real introduction to Thrawn was on Rebels. And then I read Timothy Zahn's, you know, canon Thrawn novel. And that's where I really, like, that novel is where I really was like, oh, yeah. He really became more interesting to me.
Yeah. I think a big part of it is, for me, Lars Mikkelsen's performance. He does such a fabulous job performing Thrawn. It was an interesting character to bring in because they needed to have some sort of big bad guy, but you couldn't have it be Vader or the Emperor, because obviously the Vader and the Emperor need to be kept for the movies. And Thrawn is somebody that I don't think they'll ever bring into the movies, as much as people are begging for him, because there's too much baggage there, too much backstory. This is the perfect way to do this. I was actually trying to come up with a metaphor for what I feel about Rebels as a whole, and even including the books, because there's a lot of people who love the Star Wars movies, like, hardcore, but that don't have, you know, watch Rebels or read the books or anything. Like, even our wonderful co-host April has not watched Rebels yet. But kind of the way I feel about Rebels is that if Star Wars is a tapestry, the movies are the embroidery that everybody is admiring, but Rebels and the Clone Wars and the books, they're all of the fibers that are actually holding the tapestry together. These shows are where you actually get the deep Force mythos from. I've learned more about the Force through Rebels than I ever did from the movies, because it's all very mysterious. And I'm watching the Clone Wars now, and it's like, wow, all of these characters that died during Order 66, I now care about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so much good Force lore. The beginning, the seeds of what we learned in Rebels are in the Clone Wars. With Rebels and new canon books and stuff, that's where the really meaty stuff is. I was gonna say my metaphor for the Star Wars universe is a little more using a metaphor as a religion. So the movies are the big main texts, so they're what everybody refers back to, but the really interesting stuff happens in how the wider stuff, the fans and the other storytellers besides filmmakers, interact with it.
So we did bring up the way that the Force is portrayed in Rebels, which I think is one of the great things about it, because they do introduce so many new concepts to the Force, and it is still very mysterious, but it is more solid than what we get in the movies, where, let's face it, Rey's description of you can tell people what to do and, float rocks, from what we see in the movies, is almost everything we get. But in this, they are explaining things, but it's not explaining things in the midichlorian way. It's still keeping things very steeped in fantasy. And we get the Bendu, who is, kind of this place in the middle between the light and the dark side, and just this wonderful guide to Kanan and Ezra. And then also, oh my god, the world between worlds. We could probably do an entire episode just talking about the world between worlds that comes up.
I could barely go to sleep the night after I watched that. almost more so than the finale, although that kept me pretty wakeful too. Just because it's I've had a lot of headcanons that it would make sense for the Force, to think, and there's been a lot of hints about how the Force is of course non-linear, but
I did love in the final Ezra Thrawn battle, he was lifting rocks.
Yes.
That just made me laugh this last time I saw it.
I also loved that the Bendu's prediction about Thrawn's defeat was totally right. Because
I scribbled that down all over the place.
Literally. Literal arms.
The world between worlds, I just talk about that some more, because it's really a whole episode. I almost saw it. It's this is the physical representation of the Force. This is what, if you could, see the Force, this is what it would be. Everything being connected to each other through, these roads in the sky. And, the voices from both the past and the future just all echoing through this space,
conversing with each other almost.
Yes. I will link to it in the show notes, but Star Wars Explained actually made a video where he overlaid all of the footage that from the sound clips. And the way he did it was actually really beautiful. And I was like, oh my god.
I saw that video.
So did I.
Because I linked it to everybody.
Yeah.
Me, as a little pedant, was like, oh, he missed the line. this is just because I made a whole post. I spent an afternoon, ruining my hearing and rewatching you know, episodes to source the quotes.
What line did he miss?
Oh, I think he missed Anakin talking to Padme. Anakin saying, "I can't lose you, Padme." Which is pretty faint.
But, I do think I do think Lucasfilms missed an opportunity to throw in a single line of dialogue from Solo.
Yes. But I think we don't know like what's going to be happening with Solo in terms of like, you know, force users or weird force stuff.
There was a line from Jin.
Oh, right. Duh. It would have been cool if they used the line we see in the pilot. I'm like, you know, I'm going to be a pilot, the best in the galaxy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you love pilots.
So does Sarah.
Just a bit.
I actually think Sarah has infected me with her love of pilots.
Orange jumpsuits and they fly.
Y'all are pilot people. Although I am really fond, okay, this is so off topic, but I am really fond of the female pilots in the Poe comics, but this isn't a comics episode, so.
Does anybody have anything that they want to mention? Like, anything that, like, really jumps out at them as something we must talk about?
Well, you know, if Hera is your fave, it's pretty obvious, like, that Sabine is mine. And I really liked, you know, talking about Thrawn. I enjoyed the, you know, that like we had their conversations about art, or their like maybe not direct conversations, but I loved that art connection. And I enjoyed in Wolves in a Door and A World Between Worlds how vital Sabine's just knowledge, you know, like of language and art was. I mean, because she's, you know, she's not a force wielder like Ezra, but all her work was like super necessary.
Yeah. Though I do have to say that Sabine was kind of talking like a first year art student, where she's like, it's art, of course it has a meaning. And I was not all art has meaning, honey.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed how Thrawn would sometimes be like, oh, Sabine Wren. He's like, I enjoyed how he once like taunted Ezra. She is such a great artist, or was. Sabine, in some ways, I made an edit once of her holding Ezra's lightsaber and Finn holding Anakin's lightsaber from The Force Awakens, because I loved that whole thing, that whole episode with the dark saber. I mean, if you want to talk about learning about the Force, we learned a bit about kyber crystals in that and how they interact with people in that episode. Yeah, I guess I'm just rambling about Sabine now.
It's okay. So we have talked a little bit about the connection of Rebels and the Star Wars movies. And one of the episodes that we were so enthusiastic about in the last one that hadn't yet come to fruition was Twin Suns. It was, I think, the third to last episode of season 3. But it is absolutely vital to, like, everything. It connects to Clone Wars. It connects to the original trilogy. And it's just like, oh my god, let's talk about Twin Suns a little bit.
Yes. Well, I think besides those connections, it's interesting how it functioned. It's functioned for, you know, Ezra's story arc. Because he, in some ways, for that, he was longing to be, like, you know, the Luke.
Yes.
And he learns in that you know, he can be more of a local hero, and it's not like...
Yeah, I think that's definitely been an important thing for Ezra over the course of the series. And it's connected to him not becoming a full Jedi Knight. It's that Ezra's story is very personal to him. And that's why it's important for him to not be a part of the rebellion at all during the Galactic Civil War. Ezra is the protector of Lothal. He's the protector of his family. And he doesn't need to be in the forefront. He's not a chosen one. He is a Jedi, but he's not like one of these like Luke or Anakin or Rey types. And that's completely okay.
Not everyone's story needs to impact the galaxy.
Exactly.
But Twin Suns, Maul coming back to life in the Clone Wars was pretty silly in some ways. But I mean, I was okay with it because by that, you know, it's Star Wars. But it was Twin Sons that made me really, like, really glad they brought him back to life. Like, not just for fun, because that, you know, his whole arc with Obi-Wan.
I don't think it necessarily made a great Rebels episode, but I think it was a great episode.
Yes. Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Well, it reminded me of Justice League. The Justice League TV show, they did an episode called Epilogue, which was an epilogue of Batman Beyond. And so, like, this Twin Sons was almost an epilogue of Clone Wars.
It did feel kind of more like a Clone Wars episode than a Rebels episode.
Yeah, it was a Clone Wars episode that just happened to have Ezra in it and take place, you know, many years after Clone Wars ended.
Like, it was important for Ezra, but it was definitely felt more like an epilogue to these unresolved character arcs.
I mean, I was never sure about them bringing them all back. I mean, I knew they did it in Legends, and then when I heard that they did it in, like, the new canon, I'm like, okay, I guess so. Like, but, like, Rebels made me like Maul as a character, because, I mean, like, I'm just watching Clone Wars now, so I thought his character arc was interesting, and I like that he was relatively at peace with his death.
He's pretty tragic. He and Obi-Wan as characters, their journey together. So you haven't watched Clone Wars yet, but there's a lot that happens between Maul and Obi-Wan in Clone Wars.
Oh, I'm aware of what happens. I just haven't actually seen it.
Yeah. I was kind of expecting, you know, their first fight was so, like, epic and dramatic. It made Obi-Wan, like, the Sith killer and everything. That and their final, and they've had so many confrontations. They've been each other's, like, nemeses. And for Obi-Wan, you know, their fight to just be so quiet, and for Obi-Wan to cradle him in his arms as he died and assure Maul that Luke would, you know, bring an end to the Sith. It was so beautiful.
And then the end of the episode where we just see that little hint of Luke in the distance, which, fun fact, that was actually Ezra's character model that they used. They didn't make up a whole Luke character model because that would be ridiculous.
The moment of, you know, we see him running in a field. We've seen Ezra running in a field on Lothal before, but that was beautiful. I don't think you could show Luke, you know, have Luke guest starring on Rebels like you could with Leia.
So we should probably talk more about actually what happened in season 4, because we haven't, you know, really gotten into it. So we started out and we kind of wrapped up the Mandalorian storyline that's been going on over the course of the series.
I enjoyed it. I loved getting some more of Sabine's backstory and her family, and I loved Bo-Katan coming back. But I've never been super invested in the Mandalorians, so while it was enjoyable, it was a little, I hate to say forgettable, because that's not quite the right word.
I do know what you mean, and I am reaching the point in the Clone Wars where I'm actually getting more into the Mandalorians. So I'm starting to make peace with the Mandalorians, but being someone who's coming from Legends, there's a lot of baggage with the Mandalorians when it comes to Legends.
Lots of people have a lot of Mandalorian baggage.
And that's a huge chunk of Legends that I haven't gotten to yet.
Again, I never had an attachment to Legends. So the Mandalorians I'm familiar with are the Mandalorians we get in the Clone Wars and in Rebels. And what I do like about the Mandalorian stuff in Rebels is it definitely, again, feels like a sequel to a lot of what we got in Clone Wars. And I felt more invested in it because it involved a main character who I really liked and enjoyed.
I mean, I have to say, one of the things I absolutely adore about Sabine is that Boba Fett is like the fanboy wet dream. Like, the fanboys are just crazy about Boba Fett. And actually, I find a lot of the fangirls that I meet are always like, Boba Fett, he's okay. In introducing a female Mandalorian warrior, it's just like, it's so awesome, because it's like, okay, guys, like, you like your Mandalorians. Here is one as, what is Sabine when she's introduced on the show, like a 16-year-old girl wearing, you know, pink and purple Mandalorian armor. And I just love that statement.
Yeah, I saw an interesting post about how, like, you know, how Sabine eventually, like, she, there's no indication that she goes back to Mandalore from, I mean, I'm sure she visits, but it doesn't seem like she goes and becomes part of whatever's going on Mandalore during the Galactic Civil War.
I got the impression from the epilogue of Rebels that she stayed on Lothal, that she kind of made herself, like, my actual prediction for Ezra was that he would become, like, the guardian of Lothal, and that's why we never saw him in any of the movies. But it actually seems like, oh, I was right, except that's what Sabine did instead.
It's interesting because I feel like, you know, in the episode where she goes to her family's planet, Cronest, and, you know, has the confrontation and has Gar Saxon, where she has him at her mercy with both the Darksaber and Ezra's lightsaber. And then it's like, and he's like, kill me, it's the Mandalorian way or whatever. And she's like, it might be the Mandalorian way, but it's not my way. And I think that's interesting that she both, like, really cherishes her heritage, but also, like, her experiences both with it and, like, outside of her Mandalorian culture have, like, she's a Mandalorian outsider a little bit, you know?
I think it helps that when she was training with the Darksaber, she was training with a Jedi to use it. So she almost had a Jedi-like teaching. And also, look at who her space parents are.
Yeah, that is the thing, is that she did, I mean, I really love Sabine's, you know, biological family. They're really interesting characters. But it's obvious that, like, Kanan and Hera met her emotional needs much better. Like, Ulrik and Ursa obviously, like, love her, but Ursa made some really, like, emotional damaging choices regarding Sabine, even if she said she did them out of love, and perhaps she did.
So the next parts of the last season of Rebels, we got into kind of the wrap up of our dealing with the rebellion, because pretty much by the end of the first half of Rebels, they were kind of done with the rebellion, and they were all dealing with their personal stuff then. So we got kind of another appearance by Saw Gerrera, and we also got hints at the Death Star. So even more build up to Rogue One and the original trilogy. We got to see X-Wings.
Yay!
I paused specifically because I knew Sarah would want to comment on that.
I love X-Wings.
I know you do.
I was so excited to see them. I was a little disappointed that it wasn't a bigger reveal.
Yeah, no, I was kind of the same. I was kind of hoping that we would get, like, a really big, like, seeing them, like, flying in and just, because they were talking about how they were going to reveal it, and I feel like they did not meet what they had even been saying they were going to do. But whatever. I got to see Hera in X-Wing pilot gear, which combines, it's my two twin passions, Twi'leks and X-Wing pilots.
Yeah, so season four, it's like the beginning wrapped up sort of like some of Sabine's personal Mandalore stuff, and then the middle was like the middle-ish was the rebellion, and then the last half was,
it was all personal, it all got
all with all.
Yeah, it was all on with, I don't want to say it got smaller, but in a way it did. It was all about the journeys of these characters, wrapping them up and getting them to, you know, the finale.
It got more intimate, yeah.
Yes, intimate. That's the right word to use.
It got bigger and smaller at the same time.
Of course, one character that was introduced that we haven't mentioned yet was Ruk. Ruk, I don't know how to pronounce his name exactly.
Ruk.
I didn't really care about him very much.
I hated him so much.
Yeah, I hated him, but, like, in a meh way. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I love to hate him. I was just like,
I might have liked him more if I wasn't expecting so much from him.
Yes, because there was this,
so much build up.
Yeah. And, like, people were expecting so much. It's like, when he's introduced, it's like, oh my god, is this gonna be, like, how Thrawn dies? Because obviously that's what happens in Legends.
He wasn't a complicated character.
No.
He was nice and creepy, though.
I was also really uncomfortable with a lot of with some of the language used about him. Like, they call it, like, Rebels calling him a creature and an it or whatever.
Very speciesist.
Well, yeah, and I was just like, yeah, it just made me uncomfortable. I mean, you know, guys know what, like, a Like, I love to think about sort of like these issues in the Star Wars universe with non-humans and non-humanoids and droids. I was really uncomfortable with the way they, you know, referred to him. And I mean, and especially on a meta level, it bothered me because he was played by Warwick Davis, who is a little person, and it just seemed a little bit gross.
I was just bothered by the fact that he was so unbeatable, and he, you know, for a long time he had that, like, cloaking device, and I was just like, ah, just get him. I was so satisfied when Zeb finally, like, fried the, I mean, he's just like, oh my god, like, I was so worried in the finale, it's like, oh my god. The only way that Ruck's gonna get taken out is if Zeb dies too.
Yes, I was really worried about that. I'm so glad, like, it was Zeb that took him out. And they did almost tease you that Zeb was going to do that. But he survived, and let's talk about him and Callus.
That was just like 6 exclamation points in a row, I think, was my response to it. Zeb took Callus home to meet his family.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like, in my fanfic, which obviously deals a lot with Rebels characters, I did not write that Zeb and Callus were married initially because I figured that Callus was going to die. And that's the only reason why I didn't write that in there. And then Rebels, like, when the back half actually aired, they're like, yeah, Callus is alive, and they're basically space married. They're the new space marrieds. Because, like, what else is that ending scene but, you know, introducing him to the in-laws?
With his hands over his eyes and arm around the shoulder.
Zeb puts his arm around him, but it's not like in a bro-y way. Like, Callus leans into him. And I'm a really cautious person about being like, gaze confirmed. But I feel like that's as blatant as they could get, you know, in the show. I mean, the episode where they were trapped together was so tropey. So enemies to friends to lovers, like, early days.
In an interview after the finale aired, Filoni did say, yeah, I'm completely comfortable with people reading it like that.
I mean, Steve Bloom certainly does. Zeb's voice actor.
And I mean, like, Zeb and Callus, just as characters, like, I do think a big part of their character arc is tied together. And, like, we have not mentioned Zeb as much because he is very much a supporting character in Rebels. But I love what they did with it, with them. I love that, you know, Callus has, you know, gone from being, like, the primary antagonist, basically, and to becoming a part of the crew.
He's one of, like, the friends that gets called on for this last stand. Gosh, it just makes me so happy.
And speaking of friends who are called on for the last stand, motherfucking Captain Rex. And the clones.
All the clones. All of them.
All the clones, yes.
One of the other times I, like, cried literal tears was Gregor's death.
Yes.
Ugh.
Like, his words being like, I'm glad we got to fight for something we chose.
Yeah.
It was an honor to fight with you for something that we chose to believe in.
Oh my god.
It broke my heart.
I'm crying now.
The clones had such a beautiful arc because these were clones who were created to fight in a war that they had no choice in. And they had these chips in their head that these ones, thankfully, you know, had them removed before they had to do this horrible thing. But they've kind of been, you know, adrift for decades, aging way faster than they should. And they feel like they've gotten, you know, past the point where they can actually fight. And now they found something to, you know, to fight for that they really believe in.
And Rex confirmed to be on Endor.
Rex confirmed to be on Endor. I love how they did it, that they didn't actually confirm that he was that guy.
But he is.
Yeah, I feel like they had to do that because there is a bit of a sticky issue with the fact that the guy who played the clones in the original movie.
Because he's not white, and the guy is Maori. Is white.
Yeah, there is a little bit of issue with that. So
that's true.
Yeah, I feel like that's the reason why they didn't confirm it, like, outright.
And that's a good reason not to. They put him in the hat, though.
They put him in the costume, and they say that he was on Endor. And also, it's like, the guy on Endor, his nickname is Gramps. Tell me that he didn't get that nickname from Jason Syndulla.
Oh, yeah. I love thinking about now. So Hera we knew survived because she appeared on Endor in Forces of Destiny. And also, she is in the most recent issue of the Dr. Aphra comic. She makes an appearance. It's really cool. She is running like a flight school for potential rebellion pilots. And then she gets kidnapped by Dr. Aphra. And it's really fun that we get to see those characters interact. But it's really fun to think about that, like, then she has a kid off screen. It's hilarious to me. And I imagine Hera, like, you know, she and Leia both had, like, unexpected wartime babies.
Y'all know how I feel about Kanan and Hera and babies. That was something that I didn't predict it. I was just like, I want this to happen so badly. I'm going to write about it happening, and I don't care if it's not going to be canon. And then they freaking made it canon.
I'm not really fond in general of the, like, a baby to remember him by trope, but I absolutely wanted it, and I'm happy with it here.
Yeah. And I actually, in my head, Hera in labor is the whole reason why she wasn't flying in the Battle of Yavin.
Nice.
Because, like, what else would keep her from flying in the Battle of Yavin?
I mean, she was in the Battle of Scarif, pregnant, probably. Definitely.
Well, we just know that the ghost was in, and they called her name over the speaker, so we don't know actually what she was doing.
Who else would be flying the ghost, though? Who would she let fly the ghost?
A lot of other people have flown the ghost.
I know, but does she like to let them? Whatever. I just really enjoy the thought of her being, like,
gigantically pregnant.
I saw this this post on Tumblr joking that was, like, about Mon Mothma being like, General Syndulla, do you understand why I've called you here? and Hera just being like, I do what I want.
Yeah, this sounds like Hera.
So yeah, no, we don't know. This is just me headcanoning.
Do you think Kanan knew that Hera was pregnant?
That's a good question.
Because there's a line in Jedi Knight where he says, it's what we need if we're going to save Hera and everyone else.
Ooh.
Oh, you're right.
I think he did. And actually, like, didn't he make a comment about there's something that I need to tell you?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think, like, Kanan was going to tell Hera. It's like, hey, I knocked you up.
Oh, because he sensed it in the Force?
Yeah. Well, because Leia, like, if I remember correctly, was able to sense, like, Ben very early. So I think, like, Force users are particularly attuned to that kind of thing.
Even if they're not, like, carrying the baby? Because, like, I mean,
I don't know. I think also Kanan is just, like, really aware of, like, things that are going on with Hera. And also it's his kid, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going to be like, well, Anakin, but then Anakin is Anakin.
Well, Anakin finds out about his kid, like, 2 seconds after he sees Padme for the first time, so maybe if, like, she had waited a little bit, he would have figured it out. And also, yeah, Anakin's a dumbass.
Yeah, but also he's really self-absorbed and, like, really more concerned with the fate of Padme than about his unborn children. I don't know. Anyway, it's an interesting contrast.
In the next episode, Hera also says, after Kanan's died, why did I wait so long to tell him? Which was that I love you or I'm pregnant with your child.
I feel like it was the I love you. I mean, I don't know, like, because I think that was supposed to be the first time that Hera said that I love you.
I agree.
We know she knows about it. Like, she, in the finale, when Ezra is talking to his parents and she listens, she touches her stomach.
Well, we also don't know how much time has passed since Kanan has died, so it's possible that she finds out about it later. There's a lot of possibilities. A lot of, you know, room for fic. Hint, hint, listeners.
I love it. I love that she added him.
To Kalikori.
Kalikori. I was like, I'm going to mispronounce it. I'm sorry, Twi'lex. But yeah, that was wonderful.
Oh, come on. You know I'm going to know how to pronounce it.
Well, I know you're going to know. I was like, I'm about to embarrass myself. Yeah, the Kalikori, that was beautiful.
Okay, one thing I need to bring up since we've been talking about Hera and pregnancy. Genetics.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just going to step out of this one.
How is he the son of Hera, a Twi'lek, and Kanan, a space person of color? How did we get the kid looking like that?
I mean, he did kind of look like a young Kanan, except for his eye color really looked actually more like Ezra's. I don't want to read that fic.
No, his face shape, I'm just like, why is he just looks like his skin tone is really white to me. Looks really white to me. I don't know.
And also, like, green hair is how Twi'lek translates to hybrid kids.
It wouldn't be so annoying if we hadn't seen human Twi'lek hybrids.
Yeah.
In Clone Wars. Filoni, that was your show as well.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck?
Yeah, but his aunt is Sabine. That's why he's got green hair.
Oh, is it she dyed his hair?
They don't say that, but that makes more sense.
Yeah.
He's like, I want colorful hair like Auntie Sabine. Didn't someone in a chat somewhere say, like, they're micro Leku?
Yes.
Obviously, they're not. It's baffling. It's baffling. It's the one nitpick I had with the finale.
I think they decided it's like, Kanan's dead and Jason's there to, it's something to remember him by, so we've got to make him look human like Kanan.
Maybe. I saw the worst Tumblr post. It wasn't the worst, but it was so, like, eye-rollingly bad, like, stupid, because someone was like, he's got blue eyes like Ezra. He's actually Sabine and Ezra's kid. And I was just like, good God, get a hold of yourself, fandom.
And what? Hera pulled an Eric Clapton on him?
I guess. No, it's just so terrible. And somebody asked, somebody asked Tiasir Carr if, on Twitter, if Sabine having short hair meant she was a mom.
What?
Yeah. It's a mom haircut. No, I'm sorry. Maybe we should back away from fandom idiocy. But
yes, that sounds like a good idea.
I'm so sorry, you guys.
It's okay. That happens. One thing we have not talked about, one of the face cracks of this last half of the series, is revival, the return of Ahsoka Tano.
That was perfect.
It was so bananas, but it was perfect.
It was Force weirdness bananas.
Yes.
Yes. Ugh. I would not have predicted that.
I was going to say, was anybody expecting Ahsoka to turn up in season 4?
Yes. But I didn't know how. And it wasn't like that.
I don't think I was.
I think if I thought she was going to come back, she'd come back as a Force ghost or some sort of guide or not. We wouldn't have confirmation as to, like, what happened to her.
Like, there are still so many story possibilities about her time, but it's like, yep, she's definitely alive in the flesh.
Also, can we just reflect on the fact that Star Wars has introduced time travel? Like, I mean, it's a very complicated, like, I love that they've done it so that they've introduced time travel, but they've made it basically impossible to do. So it's like, yeah, it's here, but are you going to be able to do it? Probably not. So fanfic writers can, you know, definitely exploit that. But it's probably not going to come up in any other canon.
They made it so it can't just be used as, like, a constant deus ex machina in canon. Fanfic is another matter.
Well, fanfic's always been another matter. I'll tell you when we're off mic about what I'm planning to do with that World Between Worlds. But yeah, Ahsoka. Like, I love that Ahsoka's alive. Like, I mean, I knew she wasn't dead. But I thought maybe it's like, because we did have like those pictures that they'd put out, like, or the trading cards or whatever, where it's like, here's Ahsoka's fate, and we didn't understand what they meant. And now we understand what they mean because it's exactly what happened.
Filoni was coy, was like, here's some concepts they use.
She's alive and she's active post Return of the Jedi. We don't really know what she was doing during the Galactic Civil War, but it's Ahsoka, so everything, she could do everything and anything. I'm just so happy. It's this show is so complicated because it's like, I am so sad, I am so happy, I have all of the feelings.
Yeah, and I have so many story ideas.
Yes. I think that's the sign of a really good show, where I am so satisfied with what we actually got on screen. And it's lovely to have a show where it's like, from beginning to end, I enjoyed how this played out, but then to still have tendrils of stories where, oh, I can make things go, you know, this way now. And I mean, like, basically the only thing that cut me off at the knees was actually showing Kanan and Hera's kid, but I was able to find a way around that, so. Because there's always a way around things.
Man, my feelings when the, like, exact cinematic parallels between Ezra on his Space Needle House and Sabine on the Space Needle House, like, all those, like, parallel shots. It was, you know, people make fun of George for his poetry thing, but it was poetry, and it worked really well.
I actually never make fun of George about that, because actually, it's a really good statement.
It is. I don't know. I feel Dave Filoni is definitely, like, George Lucas's heir. I've joked before about George and Dave being a master and apprentice, and Yoda's line, "We are but what they grow beyond." Because Filoni talks all the time, and it's evident in his work, about how much he cares about George Lucas's legacy. He executes things in a different way. While also like definitely carrying the George torch on. I mean, that's true of all of new Lucasfilm, but especially Dave, I think.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that.
So she's a minor character, but Governor Arinda Price.
Yes, Price. Loathsome, loathsome woman.
She's awful. She is like one of the secondary protagonists in the Thrawn novel, which like really made me like, she's one of my favorite characters because it made me sympathize with her while also like keeping her loathsome. I don't know. I was just really happy to have like a female character like that.
I gotta say, I don't agree with her at all, but I respect her having her convictions.
Yeah, her shitty, shitty convictions.
It's awful, but it's like, you know what? I believe in this, and I am going to die believing the things that I do. I am not gonna go to jail. I'm not gonna turncoat. I'm fucking blow me up.
I don't even know if it's like, she doesn't necessarily strike me as a true believer in the worth of it, but that, like, she's like, I've given so much of myself and worked so hard for this that I am not gonna, like, walk away from it. Yeah, I just appreciated her as a character. Also, I just found out that her voice actress is Zeb's voice actor's fiancé.
Oh, that's
sweet. That's fun.
Nice.
So there's a crack ship.
Nope.
No.
No.
Absolutely nope. Not.
And there were so many wonderful characters who, you know, only showed up in a handful of episodes. One of them I want to bring up, who is, of course, you know, coming over from the Clone Wars, is Hondo and Hondo's story arc. I love that, like, how much he cared. When Hera came to him and is like, we're doing this for Ezra, and Hondo's just like, for that boy, you know, I'd do anything. His affection for his, I can't remember what his assistant's
Melch.
Name. Melch. Melch, yeah.
I kind of ship them
now. No.
I know, it's awful. It's terrible. But anyway, yes, I do love how Hondo just insists that he's nothing but a pirate. But he totally isn't.
Okay, I'm just throwing this out there. Hondo as Maz Kanata's ex-husband.
I'm actually okay with that.
Yes.
Because, I mean, we know Maz has been married, like, several times. Like, it's mentioned in canon.
Married several times. She gets it when she wants it.
Also, Maz is also called the Pirate Queen. So I could definitely see Hondo, like, cozying up to that, like, I might have to write that, like, not, like, write a full story about Maz and Hondo, but I might have to mention that that happened at some point. And also, Ketsu is a character that I adore. I mean, I also just love Gina Torres, so I love hearing her voice on my screen. And, I mean, her arc is very, you know, subtle, but she definitely goes through an arc.
There are so many good, like, minor characters in Rebels who still get their own arc.
I'm also happy that she survived, just because, you know, my ship is Ketsu and Sabine, so.
Yes.
But, you know, like I said earlier, possibilities, potential, that's, you know, all I need. I don't need confirmation. Just leave me the tools so that I can write what I need.
Exactly. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about, like, Ketsu dying in the finale, but now that you've mentioned it, I'm like, oh gosh, that could have happened and it would have been terrible.
Yeah, because, I mean, it would have been a horrible thing for Sabine, but also it wouldn't distract too much from things. It would have been like Gregor dying, where it's like, you do get to have that tender moment, but it's not, like, it doesn't take up the whole episode.
Well, I'm just happy they didn't, like, kill off one of the, like, black women characters.
Well, there is also that.
But it could have made sense in story, as you say.
Yeah, and she is one of the few black female characters that we have. I mean, that's the thing. Like, now that Rebels is over, all of these characters that survived the finale, so basically everybody but Kanan, they're free reign now. Like, they can be brought into the novels, like, because they played really coy with Sabine already, and I think it was the Aftermath books.
Yes, that I've mentioned it to you, that bit haunts me, where it, like, there's one of the interludes and this reporter mentions, they're like, oh, be sure to get a shot of these helmets that are all decorated with art, but they're by the artist, and then she gets cut off.
Yeah, and it's so Sabine.
Yeah, she's the artist, and she probably has, like, Ezra's helmet collection still, and now that, like, is giving me feelings.
Yeah, but I think they were hesitant to introduce them in because they wanted to keep the mystery as to, like, who would live or who would die. And, I mean, they already, like, took away a lot of the mystery by confirming that Hera was still alive. So, like, when they were doing, like, all online, the little clickbait articles, it's like, who's gonna die in the Rebels finale? The first part of the article was always, okay, we know Hera survives, but... And then it turns out that everyone lives except for Kanan. I did make a comment, like, Ezra, they could have killed him off because obviously you need to get rid of the Jedi. Thrawn could have been killed off because otherwise, like, what happened to Thrawn? And Ahsoka being alive. Dave Filoni is basically the Stephen Moffat of the Star Wars universe because everybody lives.
Everybody lives.
But not in a way that makes me angry.
Yeah.
Because I still accept, okay, Ezra, they're not going to find Ezra. Actually, my headcanon is, this is why Luke wasn't in the Battle of Jakku. I've decided that Ahsoka, Luke, and Sabine go off to find Ezra, and that's why none of them are at the Battle of Jakku, because it's going on at the same time.
That's nice. I like that. We're talking about possibilities. I'm, you know, now that the show is over, some of my favorite Star Wars books are this little quartet of junior novels by Jason Fry that were, you know, a tie-in to season one of Rebels.
I love those.
I love those characters so much. And now I can, if I, like, write fic, Rebels fic, I can bring them in. Like, I love Zer Leonis and Mirre, and I love Dara Leonis. So, yeah, I love those characters and was kind of like, I want to see them again, or at least, like, play with them. There's so much potential. They can come back to Lothal now.
Yeah, it's so great that Rebels is like a complete storyline, that there's not really a lot of loose threads left, where it does lead fairly seamlessly into Rogue One. But there is all of these characters that can be brought in now, and we can find out about them. Like, I want to know, like, okay, is Hera still active in the sequel trilogy? Where has everybody gone now? I want to know this. Now, we do have, I think, semi-confirmation is probably the best way to put it, that Filoni is working on a new series that is going to be set post-Return of the Jedi. No idea exactly when post-Return of the Jedi, but sometime in the, like, the 30-year span. Rumor is that it's going to be called Star Wars Resistance, but that's just hypothesizing because Lucasfilm has trademarked that brand. But the thing is, people will often, like, trademark things that they don't plan to use. Either it gets close to what they are going to use, but also I think the branding does kind of work if they're going to be kind of tying it to the sequel trilogy, as this was tied to the original trilogy and Clone Wars was tied to the prequel trilogy. So it kind of worked.
It's a very strong rumor, strong hypothesis.
Yeah. And considering the way Filoni and his team have worked, tying the Clone Wars to Rebels with bringing in Ahsoka and Rex and Hondo and all of these storylines, it would not surprise me if this animated storyline, if, like, the first thing that they were doing was the search for Ezra. But I also, if they're going to be doing post-Return of the Jedi, I need them to not be as coy with characters as they were on Rebels. I liked that the main cast focused on people who are outside of the main movie cast, but I would like something closer to Clone Wars where we do get regular appearances from Luke and Leia and everybody, because
and yeah. Possibly like young Ben Solo.
Yes.
Like, once the trilogy is over, they're, like, especially coy about him, and once the sequel trilogy has concluded, I feel like they won't have to be.
I feel like even at this point, they don't have to be as coy, because one of the main reasons they were being coy about it is because they wanted to preserve that surprise as to what happened with Luke and, you know, what went down at the Jedi Temple.
I'd love to see more of that, yeah.
And if Rey was Luke's kid, because if Rey was Luke's kid, they obviously couldn't get into what Luke had been doing for years leading up to it. But all of that stuff has been revealed now. I feel most of the mystery box is empty at this point. It's kind of, at this point, what's going to happen with Kylo Ren. And that's all stuff that's based in the future. So we can get into it. And we already do know that they're going to be getting more into that, because they've released the snippet from Last Shot where it's Han and Baby Ben.
Yeah, that's true. So they're being a lot less coy about it now.
But yeah, I really want to see like the Rebels cast like interacting with the characters from the original trilogy. I want to see General Wedge Antilles.
Yes, please.
I know it was important with Rebels for them to introduce new characters, but I kind of want, you know, hypothetically, Star Wars Resistance to be mostly, like, continuing and interweaving the stories of already existing characters.
Yeah, exactly. I think at this point they've introduced such a rich cast that they don't really need to bring in new people. And also, we already know that Rian Johnson's trilogy is going to focus on people outside of the main saga. We know that the D&D movies are going to be focusing on something outside of the main saga. And we don't know about what Jon Favreau is doing, but there's so much stuff that is focusing on stories outside of the main saga. And while I love that they're exploring the galaxy at large, there's still a lot of stories with these very rich characters that we don't need to come up with new characters who, I'm sorry, there's going to be characters where it's like, this is basically Han Solo, or this is basically, yeah. So focus on the characters that we have in certain media. And I think the cartoons are the best place to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, in the comics and the novels have also introduced, like, you know, wonderful, like, new characters sort of, like, in the orbit of, you know, the Rebels characters and the original trilogy characters. And I just love to see them interact more, or like cross from like comic to screen or vice versa, you know? So here's hoping.
Also, one of the tentpole characters of the Star Wars saga is Luke Skywalker. And Luke Skywalker is played by one of the premier voice actors. Take advantage of that. I mean, I know, I'm pretty sure Mark Hamill's, like, made cameo appearances. I'd have to look that up, but yeah, like, use him as Luke Skywalker and have him interact with Ezra Bridger. And Ahsoka. I really think that Luke would just, like, beg Ahsoka to, like, help him with his training, and Ahsoka would just hear his last name and just be like, nope, peace out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice idea, but let's also, like, consider all her emotional baggage.
Yeah.
She's not required to babysit the Skywalker legacy.
Oh no, I think the second she meets Luke, she's peacing out. And that's why I think Ahsoka's still alive during the sequel trilogy, because she's just had none of Luke Skywalker's nonsense. She's had enough Skywalker nonsense. Does anybody have any final thoughts on Rebels?
Maybe I just want to mention the Mortis gods and all that, like, beautiful, like, art that, like, sort of ties things together, but also, like, doesn't at all. I mostly just want to say, like, it's so beautiful. There's a keystone, not the one that Sabine uses, but that was in some concept art, and then it was in the background of the episode, that shows the Mortis trio, and then the five on one side of a triangle, and then the Lothal Temple on another side, and on the third side, it's the five Force priestesses that Yoda encounters. And then there are some more hands and a star chart in the middle. And it's just, like, it's just intriguing. I love, like, it doesn't answer anything, but it gives me a lot of room for the imagination. And I just love how rich and textured the Star Wars universe is.
I just have to give them props for the Mortis gods painting. the way they combined the media of, you know, doing this 3D art for the main animation and then the 2D art for the painting. It was so disconcerting to see it, but beautiful, and it, like, disconcerting in, like, the best way, because it should look that creepy. Because if they had done it, like, if they'd, like, animated it like they do everything else, it wouldn't have that ethereal, like...
otherworldly.
Yes, it was otherworldly, and it was gorgeous. I loved it. I just love everything about that episode. Like, that... Like I was also, like, oh my god, how am I gonna sleep after watching this?
Oh, and shout out to the music composer, Kevin Kiner. I mean, I have to see if there's a soundtrack of the score of the final season, because if there is, I want to listen to it over and over.
I have so much love for this show. This is going to be something that I'm going to watch again and again, Adam.
Oh yeah, I want to rewatch it immediately, and if I had time.
I'm holding off on a rewatch until I can finish my rewatch of Clone Wars.
That's kind of where I am. I'm going to, except mine's not a rewatch, mine's a watch. Once I finish watching Clone Wars, then maybe I'll go back and watch Rebels again.
Maybe?
I will. maybe I'll watch it, like, right away after.
It's like, I love how we were horrified, like, you'll maybe rewatch Rebels? You fake fan. I've loved talking with you guys about this.
This is just such a... I love these characters so much. I love everything they went through. I want to see more from these characters. Even Kanan, even though he got himself all blown up.
I posted on Facebook going into the final episode that when I got back into Star Wars after seeing Force Awakens, I loved it. It was wonderful. But it was Rebels that kept me in it.
Yeah, I could see that. The Force Awakens was a great way to reintroduce people to Star Wars. But Rebels, I mean, we talked about it on the Last Jedi discussions that there was some stuff there, but not a lot to hold on to. You got introduced to characters, but you didn't get to really love them. Rebels, really, you love these characters. You knew these characters. Like, you know how these characters are going to react in situations. Meanwhile, with The Force Awakens, I mean, there's been that whole issue of you didn't really know who these characters were, and that's why people are freaking out over The Last Jedi.
Yeah. That's the beauty of this, like, multi-format storytelling they're doing. It's nice to be able to spend more, like, relaxed time or, like, get more time with characters.
I also feel like it's wonderful that you can watch the movies and just watch the movies. There are people who, they love Star Wars, but that's all they're ever going to consume. But people who are really into it get an extra reward for being really into it, because this is not just something that's like, oh, we're going to slap the Star Wars name on it, and it's, oh, they'll buy it because it's Star Wars and it doesn't have to be any good. This would be good even if it was not Star Wars. I mean, I don't see how they could make it not Star Wars, because it's, you know, quite entrenched in that universe, but these are deep and complex characters that are wonderful to watch.
And yeah, and to watch again and see different and, like, appreciate new things about them.
Definitely, yes. So if you haven't watched Rebels yet, well, I hope you haven't listened to this, because we had an awful lot of spoilers. But go and watch it. If you've watched it, go and rewatch it. And write much fic about Rebels characters. Introduce them.
All of them.
Write stuff that focuses on them. Write stuff that, you know, brings them in with, you know, the original trilogy characters, with the sequel characters. Just write with them. They're there for us to play with now, because Filoni is done playing with them for the moment. We don't know what's going to happen in the future, though.
And if anyone has an in with a toy company, please convince them that I want Callus toys.
Yes.
Please.
With good hair.
I told Funko on Twitter that he'd make the perfect pop. Because,
yeah?
Man, those sideburns.
True, yeah.
So if anyone has an in with a toy company, please pass on the request.
Okay. And on that note, I am going to thank my guests, Smalls and Sarah. Thank you for talking with me about Rebels.
Anytime.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes, that too, but anytime.
We'll see you all next time. I'd like to again thank Sarah and Smalls for joining me on that podcast. It was really great to be able to talk to you guys about Rebels. I mean, granted, I talk to you guys a lot about Rebels, but it's always nice to be able to record things and to release them out to the public. I'm such a huge fan of Rebels, and you two are some of my favorite people to talk to about this. So next month, as I said earlier in the podcast, we're going to be talking about some of the Star Wars novels that has come out. We've previously talked about Bloodline, but there have been a ton of books that have come out since then, and we want to talk about as many of them as we can. So let us know how we did on the podcast. You can drop us a line on Tumblr at trashcompactorpodcast.tumblr.com, on Twitter at SWTrashPodcast, via our website at trashcompactorpodcast.com, or through good old-fashioned email at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com. If you send us a message, we'll be sure to read them on the show. There's so much stuff that we want to hear about from fans. Anything that we've talked about, anything that you think we should talk about. And of course, we're always willing to hear more about different vehicles that people think that characters should have sex in. So until next month, this is MC, and just enjoy all of the Star Wars that is out there, and may the Force be with you. Yeah, yeah.